The spotlight will go on loyalist issues this week, for sure. There is something happening tomorrow that will be in the news. It's already in the news, but today is a significant date. It's an anniversary, especially for the reporter who I'm about to speak to, correspondent Brian Rowan. Brian, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good morning.
Brian, bring us back to exactly 21 years ago today.
Yeah, doesn't time fly? I can remember, and it would have been much later on that date in the evening, Ivan Little, your former colleague there at UTV, and myself, I was at the BBC at the time, we were called to a meeting on the Shankill Road to an office at Woodville, brought into a room. There were three men sitting there, leadership representatives of the UVF, the UDA, and the Red Hand Commando. There was a lot of speculation at that stage that a loyalist ceasefire was imminent. The response to the IRA statement that had been announced just a few weeks earlier. And when we were in the room, Gusty Spence also joined us. He handed a short statement to Ivan and myself. I've got it sitting in front of me here. So it says Belfast, 9:55 p.m. So that was the time, Frank. Wednesday, the 12th of October, 1994, and then just in three or four lines, the Ulster Democratic and Progressive Unionist parties have called an unprecedented press conference to be held tomorrow, Thursday, the 13th of October, 1994, at 9 a.m. in Fernhill House on the Old Glencairn Road in West Belfast. And, of course, the following morning at 9 o'clock, that's where the announcement of the combined Loyalist Military Command ceasefire came. So all of that 21 years ago, Frank, and here we are 21 years later, talking about the next steps in that loyalist transition from conflict to peace, and waiting for these developments that are expected tomorrow.
Just remind us of the developments that will be or are expected tomorrow in relation to Tony Blair's chief of staff in Downing Street, Jonathan Powell. He's part of all of this. David McNary, the MLA, is also part of it. Just to paint a picture for those who aren't aware of what may be happening tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I was making the point that, you know, 21 years ago, loyalism was joined up. There was a combined Loyalist Military Command. That's how the ceasefire was announced. You can remember the then Ulster Democratic Party, UDP, and the PUP being involved in talks. People such as David Irvine, William Plum Smith, David Adams, Gary McMichael, Billy Hutchinson. And that was the case, Frank, through the ceasefire period, right into the negotiations leading to the Good Friday Agreement. And then what we saw within loyalism was a lot of fracturing, a lot of feuding. People like Johnny Adair and John White, hugely destabilizing influences. And I know that my understanding is that a loyalist went to David McNary, the MLA, many, many months ago to raise these concerns about all of that fracturing within loyalism, how dangerous all of that could become. And an initiative has been developing since then, which I think is trying to bring that joined up approach, cohesive approach, back to loyalism. And the initiative that will be announced tomorrow, as I understand it, will be under this label of a loyalist community council. And what the background discussions and meetings have been about and have involved are those groups of people who would have been, identified under that combined Loyalist Military Command title many years ago. So the UVF, the UDA, the Red Hand Commando, and what this is about now, and it's happening in a couple of elements and in a number of initiatives, Frank. It is about trying to map, if you like, the next steps that would see a final phase and a final exit from the stage of those loyalist organisations.
Yeah, there'd be people listening to this and be thinking they're going to be rewarded for being hoods.
Well, as I understand it, Frank, this initiative that will emerge tomorrow does not come with funding. There had been funding possibilities explored in Norway. there had been the possibility of some money being made available to finance what is called in conflict resolution terms a demobilization program of work, which would be planning this phase that you know would have the aim of taking these organizations off the stage. That funding has not emerged, is not available at this time. I'm told there's not a dime in the bank, and some people will argue that's a good thing, because you know the point that you have just made there, people being rewarded to go away would have been part of the commentary and part of the thinking around all of this. So there is a view that let's see the colour of their words, the colour of their intentions that are announced tomorrow, and then let's see where funding and possible funding fits into all of that. The former Assistant Chief Constable Peter Sheridan, who's now the Chief Executive of the peacebuilding organisation Cooperation Ireland, was involved in some of the early meetings of that initiative that I mentioned to you, and then separately has been meeting a wide group of loyalists, exploring what a final phase in a transition from conflict to peace would look like, how it could be facilitated, resourced, and verified and checked, if you like, and all of that with a funding application, a Peace Four funding application in mind. Now, I think what people want to see is the proof that this will be a kind of final transition, a serious attempt and initiative which is about leaving the stage. Now, there are others, and you raised it in your question, who within that loyalist world are involved in crime, are involved in activities that are anti-peace. And there is also an argument that at some stage there will have to be this separating out, if you like, of those who are serious about the peace process, separating those people out from those whose only interest is self-interest and self-gain. So that will be one of the big challenges, Frank, as this process and this programme of work develops.
How disadvantaged are the people who are associated with the UDA, the UVF, the Red Hand Commando, compared to those who are associated with the Provisionals? How disadvantaged are they that they don't have representatives at Stormont? Or certainly people who would claim to be their representatives?
Well, if you go back to that period of 1994 through to 1998, I think that was the big moment from loyalism. It's when it had most credibility within this process. Both David Irvine and Billy Hutchinson were elected to Stormont. They were at the heart of negotiations. Loyalism was a big part of deciding the future steps and the path from 94 through 98 and beyond. Where all of that became damaged, Frank, was in the feuding that happened in those period of years from 2000 onwards. There has been a rebuilding, if you like, of the PUP party in more recent times. Billy Hutchinson speaking at the weekend about representation and the possibility of representation in Stormont again come the next election. We'll see if that happens or doesn't happen. But there is, I think, a move within loyalism to try to rebuild some of that political project. But you also have, Frank, within these talks, issues being discussed that clearly loyalism would have a significance and a relevance to those issues, and yet loyalism is excluded from that conversation. One of the very obvious issues is the whole question of the past, and there's a battle going on within those talks at the moment over draft legislation and how a process on the past will be shaped, what its final shape will look like. That's the new Historical Investigations Unit, the Independent Commission for Information Retrieval. Now, I hold a very clear view that those commissions should not be opening their doors. I mean, that independent commission on information retrieval should not be opening its door until it knows who's going to cooperate with that process and what are the terms of that cooperation. And I was at a loyalist event just a couple of weeks ago where they released a document on that whole sort of past and truth recovery process, and they have not been involved in the shaping of that process are in discussions about what likely cooperation with that process would be. Now, I don't know how you begin to address the big questions that are unanswered in terms of the past unless you know how the relevant groups, loyalist, Republican, how the security forces, army, police, and intelligence will cooperate. And I think in many senses, the cart is before the horse in some of this shaping of that process at this stage.
Are we naive in thinking that there are no structures in place, whether Republican or loyalist?
Well, I don't think anyone ever went away in the total and absolute sense. And, we've got this panel report that is coming this week. A panel has been reviewing police and MI5 intelligence. That after the police assessments of the Kevin McGuigan murder, where the chief constable linked current members of the IRA to that killing, where the police also said that there was an IRA leadership structure still in place. The Secretary of State, Theresa Villiers, commissioned a panel report which has been reviewing MI5 and PSNI intelligence. That panel report will not just be about the IRA. It will be across that wide frame of paramilitary organizations, including the loyalists. So we're going to hear information and reporting this week of structures that are still there, of activity that is still going on, of criminality that continues. And all of that will obviously knit into this this other initiative that's going to be announced tomorrow with loyalists discussing a final exit and a transition and this reporting of activity, including criminality, sitting alongside that initiative. So, and that takes us back to the point that I made just a moment or two ago, Frank, that at some point there has to be this separating out of those who are serious about this process and those whose only interest is self-interest.
And finally, Brian, just to take you back to what we were saying at the very beginning, 21 years ago today, what would Gusty Spence, who for the vast majority of people across Northern Ireland was seen as a killer, for people in loyalist circles, there were people who saw him as a hero. He, in the end, did issue that famous apology. What would he make of where loyalism and where the people he claimed, and I say claimed in inverted commas, to represent, what would he, do you think he would say today about where his, in inverted commas, people are?
Well, I have no doubt that in that period, 94 to 98, Gusty Spence saw a huge opportunity for loyalism. Those elections of David Irvine and Billy Hutchinson, the fact that loyalists were at the heart of things. And much of what has happened, in the period from 2000 and onwards has been away from all of that, backward steps, if you like. So I think, the big challenge for loyalism is to get itself joined up again, to get some sort of cohesive and coherent approach, and to get itself involved in a number of these discussions around some of these big unanswered questions. I mean, one of the things that is happening in the talks at the moment, Frank, and this is over and above this panel report that is going to happen on paramilitary activity. The governments have put a set of questions to the five parties. One of those questions asking about the possibility of an agreed all-party endorsed strategy to end the impact of paramilitary activity on communities and how some sort of monitoring body might report and make recommendations. Talking about getting rid of these organizations, achieving final exits, you don't do that, Frank, unless you have those people directly involved in this conversation. So I think You know, the political parties can talk about all they want to talk about, can agree all they want to agree about, but unless on some of these key issues you have, you know, all of the relevant voices in the room, then you're not going to make the progress that that these talks would hope to make.
Brian, good speaking to you. Thanks for your time. Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning.
That's Barney Rowan there.